Good morning, everybody. Very excited to do some more learning with you. I just want to say a few words of sort of framing for this session. I said last week that we would study Hallel, but given the events of the past week, given that we are studying the story of the Exodus, in which our people were strangers in a strange land, that's actually Midian, but I decided that we're going to do some learning about the mitzvah. Well, we'll see. It's a complicated mitzvah, but in short, the mitzvah of loving the ger. Now, I'm not translating ger for right now. It's often translated as stranger. Later, the rabbis understand it as convert. There's other ways to translate the word that we're going to explore. But I wanted to sort of give my take on why we're learning this today and now, because it's not my way to readjust what we're learning in the yeshiva based on current events. That's not a normal thing. I'm actually a big believer in the world goes on outside, and you sort of stay the course on the inside of the Beit Midrash. It's an important sort of counter approach than sort of changing the channels at every moment that you know something's going on, and sort of moving around and shifting your whole life just because of something that's going on. However, I think we're living in a very different time than we were living in even a week ago. And as I'm sitting, after Shabbat, like just reading my phone and reading, you know, the New York Times, which used to be the paper of record, and having people quoting, well, you know, this happened to the Jews in the Holocaust, and how could we be doing this again? It's too much for me to hold back, and I feel like I'm not a political radical. I'm not a radical lefty. But at some point, you have to just make some adjustments. And I think that's the kavana that I gave to myself once this election happened, is to know when to make these adjustments. I feel like this week is the time to make an adjustment. And so we're going to be learning about the mitzvah of the stranger. Now, this is not a class in Vayikra, and you know the cultic sacrifice, so it's not a far stretch. And we're going to tie it in, for those of you who were last week, we're going to tie it into to where we left off, so just to see how it connects, although it's really meant to be standalone. I just want to say one other word about learning Torah as sort of a reaction to what's going on in the world, because you could imagine that, well, one normal way to respond to any event in the world is to say, okay, we're emptying out the Beit Midrash, and everybody's going to go do some form of activism, we're all going to get on the phone, we're all going to go marching, and this is extremely important stuff, and as we all know, studies mentally to action. However, I also feel like two things. Number one, people are meant to do the things that they can do best. And, you know, what we do at Hadar is learn Torah. We do that well. There are many, many experts who are into other forms of organizing political action, and I'm sure you're all connected to them. If you're not, I'm sure I can help guide you. But it's not just that we're doing what we do best. I actually think that Torah learning is critical in this moment because, like when people are persecuted, the way to object in the Jewish tradition is to learn Torah. When you think of Rabbi Akiva, he couldn't countenance the way the Romans were trying to end the Jewish religion, and it's not that he went out and did a whole bunch of brises. He learned Torah. That's what he did until his end. And I actually think that it's almost like, I don't think we're here, but I almost feel like we have to know this stuff, because I don't know who's coming to take it away from us. We have to learn it, remember it, and have it inside. This is not something that we should take for granted. We have a wall of books here. I'm not taking for granted that the books will always be there. So we need to be able to learn this, to know it, and to feel it inside. That is my strong belief, and that's why I feel like today's topic, we're just going to touch the surface on, but I want you to sort of experience today as this opportunity of political action through learning. That's what we're going to do. We're going to know these texts. They're going to be part of us, and nobody's going to be able to take that away from us, no matter what. So that's my cup for today, and thank you for indulging my moment of radicalism. Why is the stranger connected to the Haggadah? Can you name for me any part of the Haggadah that mentions the ger? Yeah.
Well, just just that like we were strangers in a strange land in Mitzrayim.
Okay, good. We were strangers in a strange land in Mitzrayim. By the way, the strangers, I meant this only as an undertone, but who says, I'm a Kiger Hayiti Beretz Nochria? I was a stranger in a foreign land. Moshe. Moshe says that where? When he's naming his son, Gershom. Okay? Gershom. Ger obviously being stranger, and Sham, presumably meaning over there, but or also name. It's not exactly clear how that relates, but he's in Midian. He is in another place. He's in a sort of a third area of geographical location when he makes that statement. Okay, so where else does it show? But Jacob is of course right in the general sense that this is about the Israelites sojourning. Where else in the Haggadah?
Well, it doesn't use the word ger exactly
in Halach Ma'anya. Halach Ma'anya, yeah. Where is it in Halach Ma'anya? Where's the concept in Halach Ma'anya?
That all who are
Kol Ditzri. Whoever needs something should come, and that also sort of, and we'll see the way in which the ger often is almost entirely overlapping with other categories of people in need. Well, there is an interesting Torah law about the ger who becomes rich and what our relationship with that ger is, but in general, I would say you're right that the ger is often associated and twinned with someone who's in need. We actually have the word ger, or the shoresh ger, if not the cortex of the Haggadah. Yeah?
Is it like Arami Obed Avi and the Bayagar Sham?
Right. We saw this last time. Arami Obed Avi. Everything's hard to translate. I'm just going to say that once and then you'll know. Whatever translation is always halfway. Arami Obed Avi either means my father was a wandering Aramean, or as Mikey Rosenberg put on Facebook this week, my father was a Syrian refugee. That's where Aram is. Okay? Arami Oved Avi, my father was a wandering Aramean, or Arami Oved Avi, that is say an Aramean, tried to destroy my father, where Oved is not an intransitive verb, but a transitive verb. An Aramean tried to destroy my father. Vayered Mitzrayimah, Vayagor Sham. And so he, my father, not named in this text, Vayered Mitzrayimah goes down to Egypt, and Vayagor Sham. How would you translate that? He lived there, but living in the context, in sort of a connotation of not a permanent resident. We now, in modern Hebrew, use gar. Eifot gar means where do you live? That is to say, you're not going to move. Where did you buy your house and where are you living forever? But the term gar is not really applied that. It's more of a temporary state. Okay? So this is the first text, sort of maybe the primary text of the Haggadah. It's the one that we do the Midrash on. That we're not going to look at so deeply in this text, but in this class, but I just want to say that it is, as Jake said, it is the beginning of the story of our people showing up in Mitzrayim. Yeah.
Could one argue, Bahaya Gersha?
Bahaya Gersha. Bayagar meaning Bahaya Ger. Uh-huh. Right.
He was a stranger.
He was a stranger there. Yeah, right. Exactly. Like Bayagar, he was a verb form of the word stranger. He strangered there. That's, I think, what sojourn is. When they translate it as sojourn, they're trying to... Was a strange there. Okay, good. Yeah, I think it's meant to play. And we'll see that the word... by the way, what's the shoresh? We only have two letters here. So what's the missing one? Was it? Yeah, right? So it's... Gur is the... Ufkozal, right? Patover HaShamayim, Tuslan, Jabalacha. Ragal Tishka. Yesh Nesher Bashamayim, Gur Lecha, right? Gur Lecha means, you know, in that Israeli pop song, means like, you know, take care, like be careful, watch out. And we'll see that Gur, this Shoresh has multiple meanings, but the sort of primary one that we're dealing with right now is stranger, sojourn, not permanent resident, okay? That's the basic framing of it, yeah.
Originally, at some place, we translated resident alien.
Resident alien.
And
yeah.
I always think that sort of, it's like capturing this complex thing that we don't have quite the words for.
Right, well it's sort of a related concept, which is ger toshav. Okay, that's the resident side, like lashevet, but here to mean not to sit, but to dwell. You know, Abraham dwelled. So Ger Toshav is a alien who is dwelling somewhere. That's say not somebody who's just passing through for the week. And where does that start off? Where do we first hear that combination? Abraham. When does Abraham say it?
When he wants to buy.
Right. Ger I am a resident alien among you, and I need to buy some land so that I can bury my dead. That's actually the first achuzah, the first grabbing, as it were, the holding of a land is Ma'arad HaMachpelah. That's the Ger Toshav concept. So it's sort of related. Now the word alien for us has, because of just the English translation of it is, you know, you think of green Martians, but it's an acronym. So we don't often use that just as how to translate it here. But you can, if it works for you. Okay, here we go. Good? Okay, so I'm just going to give you a little bit of the structure of what we're going to look at here. I also want to, I don't know why, but every single faculty person at Hadar has taught on the Ger. and I was able to consult with many of them over the last few days. So I wanted to just give credit where credit is due to Shai, to Jason, to Avital. Ethan has a series on conversion, which is how Ger is understood in the rabbinic period. And also to Arya Bertzin, who's a faculty member here for many years. All of them have a lot to say on this. I see myself as the person who's standing in this moment, and that's why I am transmitting to you. But if you want to learn with anybody else, you're certainly welcome to, as well as there's a lot to be said on this from people at Hadar. So this is the structure of what we're going to do. The source sheet is basically organized. To me, I found this instructive, is to just look at the way in which Ger shows up in the Torah and in some selected parts of Tanakh. Okay, the Ger is not limited to the Torah. It shows up, but in all sections of Torah it shows up, including Tanakh. And we're going to look towards the end, but I'm not going to ask you to do this in Chavrutah. We're going to look towards the end at some of the rabbinic understandings of some of these classic Torah sources. Yeah?
Let me start. In a way, you could look at sort of everything that happens from the beginning of the Torah as being back air, as opposed to people being home, like Adam and Eve get thrown out of Eden, and then you know, Cain gets exiled, and then you know, you've got Abraham leaving, and then you've got Isaac kind of stays there, but then Jacob has to leave, and then Joseph has to leave. My question is, in any of those instances, do they use the word care? What do they use to describe their status?
Right. So no. We'll see the place in which Ger shows up earliest in the Torah, but it doesn't show up in those other stories, those early stories like Cain is Navanad Tiabar. He should be wandering around, but not necessarily a wanderer, but not necessarily a Ger. And as we'll see, there is one person whose name is Ger. What's her name? Right. So we have Ger Shom, and even before Ger Shom,
Hagar.
Right, Hagar is Hager. I mean, it's just literally a pointing issue, a nikud issue. She is literally the stranger, and where is she estranged from?
Mitzrayim.
Right. So she's having the reverse experience than our people are, and her name literally is the stranger. You could go and do just an approach on the way in which Hagar was treated by Sarah, as a precursor to the way in which the Jews were treated by the Mitzrim. That is something you can play out. But it'd be interesting to see why they don't choose the word Ger for, like, as you say, Adam and Eve were ejected from the garden. They were just sojourning there, as it turns out. Yeah, okay, yeah, sure.
Yeah, I guess I'm curious, like, in what way is a Ger understood to be something that's, like, inherent? Has like negative connotations,
right?
Something that's just like a status in the way that a community or people respond to their classification of the Ger can actually be positive. So like in terms of like Moshe, like I would say Moshe was always a stranger, like whether that was like with people that were not the Israelites or among the Israelites, like he was always a Ger. It was really just like his status as a leader that kind of shifted the way he was treated. But
and you're saying that therefore Ger is more of a permanent status, and what shifts is the way in which we treat them, or yeah. Can they?
Yeah, I don't know if I would say, or that someone, that a Ger is always bad. I think it's just the way that people react to.
Good, right. So I would say both the Torah and the rabbinic interpretation of the Torah is struggling with this question of how bad is the ger? Is the ger somebody who is all good and like a widow and an orphan should be supported? Or is the ger have some sort of inherent danger and nevertheless should be supported? And yeah, you want to add?
Yeah, I guess it's also like, is there ever some like a sort of progression where a person is no longer a ger?
Good.
Or it's just like, actually, really, you're like, it's always a ger and this is how we're supposed to treat them.
Good, right. Is ger a permanent status? Is an impermanent resident a permanent status? Or is it somebody who has the ability to cross those boundaries and then be an ezrach, which is often sort of the counterproposal to a ger? Ezrach is like a full member, a full citizen of the society. The first text we're going to look at, which is one of the core texts about Pesach, is going to play that question out directly. Can a ger eat the Pesach sacrifice? And if a full ger cannot, how can a ger change his status in order to be able to participate in the Pesach sacrifice? And also, what are some rights? What is the difference between a right and a privilege for a ger? Right? What is the basic right that a ger has versus a privilege that a ger can interact with if they take certain steps that might be a right for a citizen? Yeah, Rayella.
I just have a question. Are we, when we say ger, are we talking about a ger to Jews, or are we talking about like a ger like I'm American and there are gers? Because, you know, we have multiple identities.
You're talking about, if we use the word in current parlance.
Yeah, how are we talking about care?
So I think this is all the signs that you're seeing in the, you know, somebody the other day, like, you know, did you see a Jewish sign? What was it? It's like, so in the sign, you know, terminology of trying to use these terms in the current political parlance, I'm not sure there's a perfect one-to-one correlation, but that's what we're going to explore here. You know, to what extent, if you were going to define your own status in your relationship to the country in which you're a citizen, I'm not assuming everybody here is an American citizen, but if you choose America as your, you know, your country, does that overlap with the category of ger or ezrach or not? And how do you lose that status? What sort of shifts you away from there? That's something that we can play out. We can see. How much is this, you know, it's like, you see it on the, you know, Love the Stranger. Okay, so the liberal groups are grabbing that, you know, Leviticus is very popular now, right? You know, chapter 19. But how much of that is going to be actually applicable? I think we'll see when we try to go through these sources together, okay? So that's what I'm going to ask you to do. So the main project here, you can hear nothing from me and you will have accomplished 100% of the goal, which is to read these texts and to consider them, to get to know them, to ask questions about them, to relate to them, to say, here's what I don't understand, here's what's confusing. This is what our goal here is today. So as I said, it's mainly text from the Torah, at least the first 3.5 pages. And then you go beyond that, you're getting into stuff from other parts of the Bible. And we're going to look together at the rabbinic, I would say probably the most famous rabbinic text around the ger, as we sort of move towards the second half of the class. So the only thing you need to do now is to find another person or a group of two to turn and read these texts out loud. What is the ger? What are the questions we have about it? How do these texts, when put together, try to paint a picture of what this category is? Okay? Good? Ready? Let's go. You're going up to like through the biblical text. Let's come back together. I want to hear either some things that you noticed or that sort of jumped out at you that you hadn't considered previously. I do also want to spend some time thinking about the ways in which at least some of these texts are going to be interpreted by the Gemara, probably the most famous rabbinic understanding of the ger that we'll take a look at together. But let's just start off on what sort of jumped out at you, what nuances or differences or other, I don't know, associations you might have with ger that came out of these sources for you. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, sure. So something that Ariella and I were talking about is that like a lot of times in these texts when it says like you should treat the ger in this way, like X, Y, and Z because you were a stranger in the land of Egypt, but it never says like actually you shouldn't own slaves because you were slaves in Egypt, but it always comes up with the ger.
Yeah. Okay. That's
and that also in like a lot of ways the position of like Gnei Yaakov within like Mitzrayim was also, like, they moved to Goshen. It was almost something that they did themselves. So, like, they kind of established their own, like, status as, like, Gerim, and not, like, they now assimilated into, like, among the Egyptian people, kind of on their own.
In other words, in the question of whether a ger's ultimate sort of fantasy is to become a citizen, then you're saying that the gerim, when Bnei Israel were gerim in Eretz Goshen, they actually were able to keep it. They benefited from having a separate status.
Yeah, it was like a separate status until that was actually a bad thing, and then they were like put into servitude, kind of.
Right.
So like in that kind of way, and then also the concept of this connection between Brit Milah and a ger. And like how that kind of contributes to this concept of being a full citizen. And also, is that only important with the concept when giving a Karban Pesach, or is that with all Karbanot and becoming, like, and kind of having, like, duties?
Yeah. So there's a lot in what you said. And just to pull out a couple strands, one interesting thing is that the ger is allowed to bring sacrifices, but is not obligated in sacrifices. And Pesach being the example of, if you want to participate in the Pesach, so you have to go through this bodily brit experience that would cross you over into Ezrach category. We're saying in this chavrut over here, there's only two positive commandments that if you do not follow them, you are karet, you are cut off from the Jewish people. One of them is the commandment to eat the Korban Pesach, and the other is the commandment to circumcise. So in one fell swoop, the ger, by being circumcised in order to eat the Korban Pesach, is then sort of expressing himself in a positive, at least vis-a-vis positive commandments, as a full member of the society. The gerim are, just like Bnei Israel, also enjoined against negative commandments, at least the sort of ethical, or the way the Torah sees the ethical negative commandments, and therefore they're just sort of like not hurting society. But to build up society, or to partake in the Pesach and to be sort of full member, that is their crossing point, which is interesting. And then what you put out about the Eved versus the Ger, you know, as you said, could have been all about. I mean, what struck me around this is that the Ger was such a feature of their life. I mean, it was not like, hey, remember when? It was just like slavery is also a feature of their life. It was obviously, there were tons of gerim who were hanging around Bnei Israel. It was not like one day, 2,000 years down the line, when you have an immigrant policy, like, remember this text. It's like, it's a live situation. For whatever reason, people are drawing themselves into Bnei Israel, but are not crossing that citizenship boundary. And that's just sort of a fact of life. Now, you could have a whole separate thing about why Eved, and how do they actually work to limit the status of Eved, even if they're taking up a deen. That's a whole other project, but it is striking to say that you could have got either way on this. One of the things that struck me was that the way, if you look at the bottom page 3, the text, just this one short pasuk from Devarim, Lo titaev Adomi ki achicha hu, and Lo titaev Mitzri ki ger hayita be'artzo. Now this is, it's an amazing two categories, because what do we know about Edom in the Torah? First of all, who's the original Edom? Esav, right? Because he's ruddy, he's red, red-haired. But what do we know about Edom from the desert march? What made them so bad?
Because they wouldn't let them pass.
Not that they're out to get you like Amalek, but all we want to do is just take the highway through your land, and they say no. Right? So in that way, the Edomites are people who are not behaving in a way that would, you know, that we should be modeling ourselves on. And yet, why can't I hate them for this horrible sin that they did to my ancestors? Because they're relatives. This is family. It's Yaakov and Esav. They're brothers. However, the Mitzrim, why can't I hate a Mitzri? I have plenty of reasons to hate a Mitzri. Why can't I hate him? Not because he's my brother, but because originally when we showed up in town, we were the ger and they welcomed us. I mean, that is, in other words, the Mitzrim, at some point, were practicing the model of what it means to welcome the stranger. That's how Bnei Israel got there in the first place. Otherwise, they would have died, just to be clear, they would have died in a famine in Canaan. It was they were not just like, hey, let's go here for summer vacation. It was like, they're a refugee running away from sort of their climate change. Right, climate change, whatever you want to categorize it. They have no resources to live on, and the Mitzrim say, yes, you can come here. Now, it's true that Yosef was involved, but still, the good, they could have said, and you can hate the Mitzrim because it was all up to Yosef who let them in. But they didn't say that. The Mitzrim are not to be hated because they welcomed you in.
Well, I think it's interesting that they use the word titae, because that's like, it harkens back to toeva, which is like an something in importance. Like, it's like the worst thing when, like outlawing of various sins in Vayikra is like using this word as well.
Yes, well, yeah, and it has another resonance as well, which is to say the toeva for Egyptians. Remember the scene when Joseph and his brothers are there, but the brothers don't know it's Yosef yet, and they have to eat separately. Why? Because it's a toeva for Egyptians to eat with Israelites. Right? So you could have also said, you should hate the Egyptians because they hated you and they wouldn't let you eat with them. Right? Separate but equal in some ways. Right? But they're saying, they're not focusing on that. Right? They're nevertheless saying you can't do that. Why are we supposed to love the stranger according to these texts? What's the reason to love the stranger? What's that? Okay, so one thing is because we were strangers, right? And
God brought us out of the land of Egypt.
And therefore?
I mean, that seems to be the refrain. Certainly it's in Leviticus 19, that I sort of don't understand that totally about what, but that's over and over again. It's in the Kiddush, you know, Kiddush for the
right.
Wine and stuff. So that it's having redeemed us or freed us, I don't know. That's why we have to do all these things.
Yeah,
it doesn't
okay.
make sense exactly.
All right, so one thing which is very clear, and this is sort of, I would say, in the normal parlance, the main reason we love the stranger is because we identify with the stranger. The stranger is a familiar narrative for us, and we want it to be loved as a stranger. We can remember the experience of the stranger, and therefore, just out of identification with that person, we should love them. There's another reason that the texts say to love the stranger. Yeah, Amos.
The identification is not only because of the history, it's also now we are also Gerim. In Vayikra, like, Gerim Atem Imadi. We are still like kind of like permanent residents in the land of God.
Right. This is a separate but amazing point, right? If you can see on page 2, right? In Leviticus 25:23, you cannot sell the land forever. It's not possible to have a permanent sale of the land. Why? Kili aretz, because I own the land. God, right, capital I, okay? I own the land. Ki gerim v'toshavim atem imati. You are just resident aliens here with me. But we never lost that. We never fully lost it, sort of theoretically, theologically. We are always gerim. Everybody's a ger. Because nobody owns this place. Because which also seems to identify land ownership with ezrach status. Right, I was saying some of the chavrut is that there is no such thing as a ger with Israel when Israel is outside, when Bnei Israel is outside the land of Israel. When they're in Babel, you don't have gerim in the same way that when they're living in the land of Israel, you have gerim. But here, Leviticus blows up the whole thing and says, "There's no. Please, come on. You're telling me you're an ezrach, you're a landowner? No, we're all on borrowed land, as it were." Okay, but why? What's the second reason that you would love the gear?
I mean, the way one implication could be God saying, "Listen, I did this for you, and you're in Bidibut, right? You're in my image, so you now have to act the same way."
Okay, good. So it relates to God's behavior. If you look at page 3, in Devarim Yud, this is I think is very important. The great, mighty, and awesome God. These are particular temptations for the judge, right? The judge is somebody, like when you want to bribe somebody, it's like you don't bribe the gas attendant, you bribe the judge, okay? That's the guy who has the power, and he is not meant to take any bribes. Osem mishpat yatom ba'amana, God does justice for the widow and orphan. Ve'ohev ger, and loves the stranger. What does it mean to love? We're talking about this. Is love is like romantic love? No. What's love here? Love means you give food and clothing. That's how I love you. It's like a ketubah. You know, I love you. It's such a romantic day, the wedding. When actually you're looking at the legal papers, it's like, I got to feed you, I got to clothe you. It's like, that's what, you know, the real responsibilities here, okay? So love, as is to say, love as identified through acts. And, ki gerim ayita b'eretz Mitzrayim. So this text brings both sides. You love the ger because you were gerim in Eretz Mitzrayim, and you love the ger because I, God, love the ger. And as you were saying, you want to imitate God. So you have two sides of these things. Because we're talking about to love to protect the widow and the orphan. It doesn't say because you were widows and orphans. Not all of us are widows and orphans. We still have a need to protect them. Why? Because God protects them. So we're following in God's ways to protect the widow and orphan, even if it's not our own personal experience. It's just that the gear happens to come from both sides. Like, it's getting it from both sides. Number one, God protects them because they're vulnerable. And number two, we experience that as well. So it's like a double. Yeah.
So we talked about the levels of identification, and that actually we can take for granted that a human being who just noticed the stranger and lets it stay in his head, oh, I better be kind to that stranger, it's not enough. In order for you can have memory, yes, I remember I was a stranger. You can have awareness, we're still up here, it's not enough. But you actually have to put yourself in the lives of people who are really vulnerable. The widow and the yatom, the widow and the orphan. Imagine what that feels like. That's how much you must feel. So now we're in the domain of feeling. But that's also not enough. It's not enough to just say I have empathy. We have to have compassion. And compassion ends with acts.
With acts, exactly. Yes. Right.
So it's an integration of this idea of valuing the stranger from head to heart to feet.
Good. Good. I love that framing, and I would say that it is a progression in some ways that starts off on page one. The lowest level is lo toneh v'lo telechatzenu. Let's just not, like, first do no harm. Let's start there. But it then moves into these other realms, Ray's suggesting, that ends with this love that is more than just don't hurt them, but actually support them. I mean, what's also amazing, not in all these texts, but the ger is also categorized with the levi, right? The ger and the levi, nobody would suggest that the levi is like a charity case. I mean, they are a charity case, but only because they've devoted their life to serving in the temple and therefore forfeited any land. Right? But it's nobody says a Levi, oh, Moses was a Levi, Aaron was a Levi, those poor Levim, I better support them because I pity them. No, it's like they have a different role. And the Ger and the Levi are sort of playing out these other roles that are meant to be supported by the general populace. Yeah, direct.
Just speaking of feelings, I think it's incredibly powerful that the Ger is the concrete Harman Pizza, which is like very nice to be the original experience of Ger, and like that Ger who's coming later to do that is kind of pretty.
We can actually experience Yitzhak yeah. Mitzrayim in the like yeah. most relevant way.
And I think that would be like the social learning from
yeah, yeah, right, right. What I would say, again, connecting the Ger with the Levi were also, the Levim were seen as the teachers. So in what way are you going to start, once you start to equate these categories with each other, in what way is the Ger meant to be not a charity case, but also a teacher? As you're saying, a teacher of experience that we can't necessarily always relate to as well. You're going to add, yeah.
Well, on that point, I was really interested in this concept of the ka'achat,
mm-hmm.
this one law.
Right.
On the one hand, it is very powerful, I think, that you welcome this gear and you can, to the extent that they can do the exact same mitzvah that you're doing. On the other hand, maybe you're forcing them to disregard their, maybe they have a formative experience on their own that wasn't part of the Jewish people, and they sort of have to disregard that and ignore that. And assimilate entirely into the way that you're doing things in your community.
Good, right. This is a very interesting thing, because once it gets translated, we're going to see this in a second, once it gets translated by the rabbis into the world of converts, so then the rabbis sort of take that and say, well, you're not allowed to remind the convert of their past. But what you're saying is, but maybe there's actually some part of their past that they want to hold on to, which is core to their identity, that, you know, crossing over into the Ezrach land sort of forces them, you know, to give up.
Right, like, do you love them because they discard their difference, or do you love them because of their
difference? Because of their difference, right. How much can they hold on to that difference as they move in that way? We're talking about Ruth, actually. If you look at Ruth, obviously a classic convert, but Ruth is somebody, is, you know, she's from Moab, and how much of she has to give up, at least theologically. She's like, I'm done with those guys. I'm coming on to your team. But in what way does she sort of retain, maybe in ways she's not fully conscious of, in ways that, yeah, I don't know, that we can learn from her, maybe even on the chesed front. Yeah.
Well, that really makes me think that it's, you know, it's debatable that how much that was a conversion process, but that he really brings it to motion, the idea of judges, one of the most important shifts in the way Moshe was treating the Israel.
Right. Right, right. The Torah is very fond of certain non-Israelites who some of our less perfectly moral ancestors are able to learn from. I mean, one of them is Yitro, the other is Malki Tzedek, which we talked about some of the classes here. So yes, I would say like, and Yitro doesn't necessarily cross over. At the end of the day, he's not with B'nai Yisrael. He leaves them aside and doesn't follow all along with them. He just, he retains his identity and sort of shares that and moves on. Yeah.
Just the other thing in relation to what Joseph just said is,
speak a little bit.
We were just discussing how this, did you say Chukha Echad is described in Shemot Torah Echad.
Mm-hmm.
So we were just obviously making a lot of sense and the difference between literally one law and a whole book.
A whole set of wisdom. Yeah, yeah, good, that distinction. Yeah, yeah.
Possibly
okay.
To remind the convert how to treat other converts.
Interesting. Uh-huh. Well, we'll see. Yes, the rabbis have. There is some concern about the way in which converts might act, even having gone through the process. You're going to say?
Following up exactly on what you just said, that it isn't just that in one place it says Hukachah and then Torah, it also says Mishpachah.
Mm-hmm.
And we're trying to figure out the distinctions among those three. Because if it literally, it phrases it three different ways.
Right.
And we couldn't figure out whether it's what kind of law it's talking about, and even what the Torah means when it uses the word Torah.
Right, right. So my sense is, my sense is that Torah, you could go other ways, but my sense is that Torah is, once you cross over into citizenship land, there's not a, oh, you're a convert. Again, here it's like a sort of tribal convert. So you'll get like a, you'll be like a substatus member of the people. You're not a ger, but you're somewhere in the middle. No, Torah Echad, you can actually do the full conversion over to the other side. Whereas Mishpat Echad is, even if you don't go through the conversion process, you're subject to the same right, and then not the same rights, the same protections as everybody else is. Right, like you can go, if you're a ger, you can run away. He was studying Mako, right? You can run away to one of the Arami Klat, the cities of refuge. They have access to that. So they have protection, Mishpat Echad, they share already. And they can cross over and get to Torah Echad if they do the conversion side. Let's take a couple more. Yeah.
I have two questions. One is in Varn Parakiyod, in Pasuk, that when it says, okay, so I'll send a shpat to the fatherless and widow, but you should love the ger. So what's the difference between doing a mishpat and loving somebody?
Good, yeah. So this is on page 3, yeah.
Loving is elaborate, you may give them food, give them clothing, but what, so they're both actions, but in what way do they differ? And also, on the first page, in Shmuel Perek Yud-Bet, it says, no foreigner shall eat from Passover offering. So what's the difference between a foreigner and a ger?
Good, right. Okay, so on the second question, so the very first pasuk on the whole thing, the first thing we ever learn about the Pesach is, here's what identifies the Pesach, non-Israelites don't eat it. I don't even know anything else about it. It is something that is reserved for the citizenry. Now, what's interesting is that it seems like the term ben nechar is similar to ger, except for that a ben nechar is somebody who is associated with the Israelites when they're in exile, and a ger is somebody associated with the Israelites when they're in the land of Israel. Okay, now, you can't totally draw that as a clean distinction, because even in this section, now we're talking about a ger. But ultimately, that's what happens, is that Israelites are only able to have gerim associated with them when they are landowners. We're talking about like the king, whether Israelites are sort of owning the land and how that's a stand-in. In the meantime, for what it means to be a citizen. But a ben nechar is somebody who's foreign born, but nobody who's living in Babel, the Israelites or the b'nei nechar, are members of that citizenry in the first place. So I think they're trying to play out with those, with some of those categories. But it is interesting to see how they identify Pesach is for this group of people, not for this group of people. And on the Devarim Yud, Oseh Mishpat, I think it's interesting is that Ohev is clearly about doing acts. Like, if you think about the Shema, the Avtat and Alohecha, love the Lord your God, it's not like, oh, I wake up in the morning, I have this warm, fuzzy feeling. It's like, I'm going to be doing a whole bunch of acts, right? So the rest of the parable talks about mitzvot. That's what they're talking about. And similar here, love is expressed in action. Mishpat seems to be, in the local case here, about judgment. That is to say, when they're come before the court, who's going to bribe? A widow and an orphan has no access to resources, isn't able to bribe the judge. Right? Now, maybe it's because the ger doesn't even show up in front of the judge. Right? They're just not in that system at all. So they're already in another category where all they can get is social welfare. But I would also say that in Mishpat, you could draw, I don't know, you don't have to limit it to just a judgment, you know, in a court scene. But I think on a local level, you could take it that way, and that would be one way to draw a distinction. Well, I want to look at some of the ways in which the rabbis read some of these texts, because it's kind of amazing what they do, as is usually their way. They're kind of amazing with this stuff. And make sure that we don't leave here without seeing just a little bit of that. So turn over to page 7, okay? But I can't resist because Shai writes about this, and I think it's a very strong point. We're talking about the word ger, not only having the connotation of stranger, but also has another connotation in some of the texts of fear. And you can see that actually on page 6. We say this psalm in davening, Darashi et Adonai ve'anani, I turned to Hashem, and he answered me, Umikol migurotai hitzilani, from all my terrors. Migura is a terror. I think there's something about strangers which are terrifying. Like, they're not like, oh yeah, that guy looks just like me, just didn't get his papers yet, right? It's like, there's something scary about the stranger, right? And nevertheless, you know, love them and all these other laws, right? That's to say, if they're not it's not a neutral term word. It's not just like like the State Department has, different categories and they are all value neutral. It's like, here's a scary thing. You're gonna, yeah.
Yeah, but we were discussing, couldn't it also be that from the stranger's perspective, it's terrifying to be a stranger?
Absolutely. That's right, that's good. So in other words, Gare is not that I am terrifying to you, the citizen, but that I am terrified. I'm someone who's terrified. Absolutely, right. You think of somebody who is, you're Yaakov and his children, and you're leaving because of famine, and you're going to a whole new world. You're scared out of your mind. We have no idea how people are going to treat you, right? I think, yeah, a very, very strong point. Okay, so just take a look at page 7 here. This is the classic text about Gerim that, when you see the context, it's actually quite amazing. The context of this Talmudic passage is the story of Tanur Shalach Nai, is the story of Rabbi Eliezer, who gets excommunicated by his colleagues in the Beit Midrash. We're not going to go into it, but this is, he goes to all the miracle worker, if such and such happens, if the tree jumps up, if the water flows backwards, if there's a bot hole in heaven that's going to come back and say that I'm right, let it happen, it all happens, and nevertheless, lo bashamayimi, it's not in heaven, we go by the majority, Rabbi Ezer is overruled, but not only overruled, he's excommunicated, okay? And the story, that story goes on and ends somewhat tragically, where Rabbi Eliezer, his prayer is heard by God, and there's tragedy that strikes Rabban Gamliel. He dies at sea, and then sort of end scene, okay? And then we have the following statement that follows immediately after the story, okay? So Tana Rabbanan, the rabbis taught, Hamilaner ager, whoever mistreats the ger, violates 3 prohibitions. And one who oppresses him violates 2. This gets to the basic question of, why do you have to say, lo tonu velo tilachatzen? Why do you have to say, don't, how do they translate it? Tonu is, don't taunt, or don't be mean, and don't oppress, and don't, it's like 2 words that mean the same thing, the synonym. So why are they saying both? Lo tonu velo tilachatzen. Okay, so what they're telling you is, if you do either of those, one of them you have 3 opportunities to violate, the other one you have 2 opportunities to violate. And then they prove it to you, and this is what's amazing, okay? They say to you, okay, what's the difference between tonu and telachatzen? They're synonyms. Okay, so then they're going to bring you the verses in which they come. These are the verses which you saw. Okay? Number one is, ger lo toneh. Don't mistreat a ger. Number two is, when a ger lives in your land, don't don't mistreat him. And then the last one is, v'lo tonu ishen amito. A person shouldn't mi'aneh, shouldn't treat harshly his amit. What's an amit? Your friend. Okay? Where's the ger in that pasuk? Not there. It is not there. They're saying lo tonu has three, you have three violations if you are mistreating a ger. Why? Because of these three psukim. Only two of which say ger. That is to say, what do they just sort of slip under the table here? A ger is an amit. When they say don't violate, don't oppress your amit, your fellow, they also mean to include the ger. It's not exclusive of the ger. They totally could have gone the other way. Right? They could have said, oh, amit is obviously not a ger, otherwise it would have said Adam or, you know, everybody. V'ger bichlal amito. Ger is included in amit. Okay? So just conceptually, the idea that a ger is already a fellow of yours is something that they're bringing out here right away. And then they bring in the three verses of Tilachet, and they say, oh, you know what? It turns out that there's three of those too. So they say, yeah, you want to oppress a stranger? So you're going to violate three of Tonu and three of Tilachatzev. They expand the categories of violations, okay? They're not comfortable with just saying you violated two. Okay, now here's the story. Tanya, there's a Braita. It's taught in a Braita in the second, two-thirds down on page 7. It's taught in a Braita. Rabbi Eliezer the Great said, who's Rabbi Eliezer the Great? Rabbi Eliezer HaGadol? Rabbi Eliezer ben Hyrcanus, right? He is the Rabbi Eliezer. He is the number one guy he's the student of Rabbi Yochanan. His colleague is Rabbi Yeshua. He was the one who was just excommunicated earlier in the page. Okay? This is him coming back. He's excommunicated. You know what it means to be excommunicated from the Beit Midrash? You don't listen to him. But here he is, right here. How long was he excommunicated for? 4 seconds? Right? Like 9 lines he was excommunicated. And then he shows up over here and he's going to teach us the following lesson about someone who's on the outside. Okay? This is the well-known law about the number of times in the Torah. So he says, Tanya Rilezer Agadol Omer, Mibnei Mai Zira Torah B'Shloshim B'Shisha Mekomot V'Amrila B'Arbin Arbaim B'Shisha Mekomot Beger. Why is it that the Torah warns you in 36 places, and some say 46 places? So now, it's not just three violations. It's not three violations of Tonu and three violations of Telachatzenu, but rather, how many violations are you over on if you are oppressing the stranger? Somewhere between 36 and 46, okay? We've just really upped the ante. That's to say, the whole flow of the sugya is to say, you want to oppress a stranger? Well, it's 2 plus 3, it's 5. And actually, it's 3 plus 3, it's 6. Actually, it's 36. Actually, it's 46. Like, do I hear 100? You know, like, let's keep going here, okay? So Rabbi Eliezer says, why is that? So this is also where we get the idea that it says in the Torah 36 times to love the stranger, to not oppress the stranger. It doesn't actually say it in the Torah 36 times. But Rabbi Eliezer is saying that it does say that 36 times. Now, it says ger a lot in the Torah, so you could probably figure out a way to add it all up, but it's not as clear as he's making it sound. So when people say, the Torah says 36 times, don't oppress the stranger, it's like, kind of. It's like, according to Rabbi Eliezer, yes, okay? But it's not like if you're going to just do a Google search for those terms, you would pop up 36. Okay, so now, this is where it gets complicated. Why is the Torah so obsessed with keeping the stranger protected? Mipnei shesuro ra. Okay? Because his inclination is evil. Okay? What is suro? Sur. Sur meira v'aseito. Yeah, to turn away. Moshe was sar lirot. Moshe turned aside to see the burning bush. So the ger is suro ra. His inclination, his turning, is towards evil. Okay? So, now again, this is where it's like, it's not all like love and roses with the ger here, okay? So according to Rabbi Eliezer, the reason why you might be tempted to oppress the ger is because the ger himself has some tendency towards evil, tendency towards ra. And you could say, tendency towards ra, let's lock him up, right? Because then we'll keep everybody safe, and then we won't have to experience the ra. right? It's a tendency towards ra. It's not actual ra, it's a tendency. So we're saying, even though you might see this tendency towards ra, nevertheless, love that guy. Like, give him food and clothing, yeah?
How do you know it's suhova and not mipnei shesuhova? Like,
how would you translate it?
Like, usually, like, so you have a tendency to do evil.
That would be great. It's not how it's typically read, but it would be very interesting to read it that way, right? Especially if you're Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Eliezer says he knows the way in which people mistreat people. He was just mistreated like four lines earlier. So you could that would be very, that was a lovely way to read that. Where the ger is innocent, and actually we, the non-ger, the ezrach, the rabbis, the majority, right? Rabbi Eliezer is beaten down by the majority. He's excommunicated by the majority. The majority learns latot. They lean towards ra, right? Tyranny of the majority, right? It's the majority can't always trust the popular voice. Okay, well, in this case you could. Okay, and anyways, now let's just see one more step further here, which is an amazing move. Okay, so now the Gemara asks, "My dichtiv beger lo tonev lo telach chatzenu ki gerim yitam beretzim tzaim." So the Gemara goes back to the same pasuk and says, "Why do we not oppress the stranger? Why is it so important?" Tanya, Rabbi Natan Omer, what's the reason? Not because of Suro Ra, if you want to read it Amos's way or other ways, but rather because of the following way. Mum Shebicha Al Tomar L'Chavercha. Right? Why am I tempted to hate the stranger, to oppress the stranger? Because I recognize him in me. And we all know that all of our behavior is just us fighting with ourselves. Right? We don't like the way that person's behaving, it's because they remind us of us. Right? That person is behaving in a way that actually is bringing out the part of me that I don't like, and therefore I'm tempted to push them down. Right? The mum that the supposed mum that the stranger has is actually the same mum that is in us. That is to say, ki gerim hayitem be'eretz Yisrael, we were a ger, and I don't like, I am the grandchild of an immigrant, so I don't like immigrants because it reminds me of my unsure status. You can apply that however you want, okay? Right? But it is a true human nature. I mean, these guys are getting it. It's like the moon that I have is what I see in that person, and that's why I'm tempted to mistreat them, and that's why I have to be told so over and over and over again, don't do it. Because it's so natural to do that. Yeah.
Okay, but isn't there a difference between saying, I see that in the ger, I see the ger in me, versus I just another Jew and another Jew being like, I see your faults in me? Like, why do we need to look to the ger to see our own insecurities?
I think we don't need to look to the ger, but when we look at the ger, we see our own insecurities.
Right, but also when I look at not the ger.
But 100%. The saying is, kol sheposel b'mumo posel. Whoever is making something pasul, inadmissible, is always doing that based on his own mumim. Right, that is to say, I don't like the way you're sitting. It's because it reminds me of the way I sit.
Right.
Right. But he's just saying in this particular case, in other words, you could say, oh, what does it mean? Love the stranger because you were, or don't oppress the stranger because you were strangers in the land of Egypt. It's because you identify with him. You remember how hard it was to suffer the way he suffered. No, it's because you're embarrassed of the way you used to be. That's the interpretation of the verse. So he's reading the verse and saying, you shouldn't do it because you're a ki gerim hayitem be'eretz Yisrael. It's because it's so familiar to you and you're trying to run away from that story. Oh, I was never a ger. I've always been here, right? I've been here for hundreds of years. That's the instinct that he's trying to put out here. Now, just to be clear, this becomes halacha. This is law. Now, the way it becomes halacha, and I brought you just like, for your own, like, take it home and read it. The Rama makes this into black letter law. You're not allowed to oppress the ger. The rabbis understand ger here as not the biblical ger, but the ger that is the convert. And this is also in that same sugya with Rabbi Eliezer. Before the story of Rabbi Eliezer is the whole thing of, are you allowed to remind a convert of all the actions that his ancestors did? There's a parallel to the source we're looking at now on page 8. We're going to end with this. Which shows, it's kind of amazing. Just look at the top of page 8. So first of all, they identify for you. What's the difference between Tonu and Telachatzenu? Tonu is the different categories of how you could oppress. Tonu b'dvarim, You should lo tonanu bidvarim with words, and lo tilachatenu b'mamon. Don't oppress him financially. Don't oppress him verbally. You can have verbal oppression, okay? Mm-hmm. And what's verbal oppression? Shelo tomar lo. Emma shayita oved leval kores nivo. For all these, yes, just yesterday, you were worshiping all these idols. They named some names. And you had pigs stuck in the middle of your teeth. You're like violating core principles. That was yesterday. And now you're speaking up against me. Oh, you convert, right? You were part of a different people, and now you want to challenge me on it? It's fine. You want to just go the normal, you want to fall into line. Great, you can join our group anytime. But if you want to actually challenge me, then I am tempted to say, oh, come on, you're not really part of this group. I remember who you can. I remember what you were doing yesterday. Look at what you were doing yesterday. You still have the program from the shul, from Kores, right? I saw it, right? You have pigs stuck in your teeth. So you can't say anything to me, right? That is to say, the assumption here is that there is a challenge that's happening. The ger who's crossed over to the other side, maybe this gets to your point, Joseph, is that he has a different perspective that he is then going to challenge you with, right? That doesn't say the nature of the challenge, but you could imagine that to be the case. And you can't say, lo tonenu bidvarin, you can't say, oh, you, I forget you. I know your family history. You're different from, you think you're the same as me, but you're different from me. Now, again, at the end of the day, the rabbis understand all of these laws to be about converts. Because really, they weren't living in a world in which there was citizenry in the same way that we had. There was no political autonomy. So just like we saw last week with the Haggadah, the Haggadah becomes a book that doesn't tell the story that ends in Eretz Yisrael, but ends elsewhere because you're not talking about people who have political autonomy. And nevertheless, R.A. Bernstein sent me this great sort from the author of the Mishnah Berurah, but it's a different sefer of his, where he basically says, you know what? When I say ger and loving the ger and don't oppress the ger, yeah, I mean the convert, but I also mean the people who come from another land or another city to reside among us, and all the more so a ger is a convert. That is to say, just because the term moved from a religious convert to a religious convert from a societal tribal convert, that doesn't mean that you lost the original definition. So if you happen to be living in a time where the ger is somebody who's crossing geographical boundaries, right? That doesn't mean, oh, we don't care about those people. We only care about people who convert to Judaism in a religious sense. That's not what we're talking about. It's both and, okay? So I guess what I want to leave us with is some sense that the rabbis take these texts, not only apply them to a religious category, but also are able to say, the ger is your amit, the ger is the same as you. The ger reminds you of yourself, and that's why you're so bothered by him. And the ger is going to speak up against you, and you're going to be tempted to shoot him down with words, and you can't do it. So my hope is that these texts are helpful for all of us as we're dealing with these issues, whether in theory or not. Go on. All right.